honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Before we pick up this remarkable rescue story with Harry Zinser, why don't I read the citation that accompanied his Navy Cross? It says, "For extraordinary heroism in action on the night of 6 August and early morning of 7 August 1972, while serving with Helicopter Combat Support Squadron 7, Detachment 110, embarked on USS Saratoga, CVA 60, as pilot in command of a combat rescue helicopter during nearly 5 hours of a coordinated search and rescue effort for United States Navy pilot downed in North Vietnam, Lieutenant Zinser, in face of intense enemy fire, commenced a low-level flight and turned on his landing lights in order to facilitate the search. Although his aircraft was repeatedly hit by enemy ground fire, he continued the search until the downed pilot was visually located. Lieutenant Zinser then carried out a skillful landing, picked up the downed airman, and succeeded in flying his crippled aircraft at treetop level back to the safety of Saratoga. By his outstanding aeronautical skill, courageous leadership, and inspiring dedication, Lieutenant Zinser reflected great credit upon himself and upheld the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service." That Navy Cross hangs on the wall of now-retired Navy Captain Harry Zinser. And when we left off, Harry, you had found Jim Lloyd, that pilot who had miraculously survived a low-level bailout from his crippled jet, but you and your crew still had a lot of work left to do.
So now the thing is, how do we pick him up? Because there's a lot of small arms fire going off now. And I guess right as we came into hover, so our crewman, he had to let out a 30-foot cable, pulls the cable out, gets in, jungle penetrator, gets on jungle penetrator, then we take off. We reel him on. Just like from the water pickup. We got to land. Because there's too much small arms fire going on. They hit an engine, and we go sitting in the engine, we lose partial power on engine. We get in a hover at night. We're too heavy to hover single engine. But if we're on the ground, we take off using ground effect. As we pull in the hover, they open up with a AAA gun, 37 millimeter gun probably, 100 rounds a minute. It's mounted on a mobile truck. The barrels have to be adjusted manually. So it's already adjusted for about a 30-foot helicopter, point blank range. As we pull in the hover, all of a sudden, he opens up fire. We start landing. I can just see the guys sitting there, man, cranking the barrels down fast enough.
So they're cranking it down into place to try to be able to shoot you.
And we landed, and we landed right next to him. Our crewman reached out, grabs him, hauls, yanks him in the helicopter. He thought he was captured at that point. He thought he was captured. And we take off right as the last bullet clears our helicopter. We got the car swift across 3,500 feet, I know. So we're about 3,500 feet, and I'm hauling. I'm at red line airspeed. Red line airspeed is 120 knots in the helicopter. If we got about 150 knots, we started getting a buffet, slid buffet at 150 knots. Everything was nice and clear. I thought about jinking. Jinking is the only thing that we had done that night. Jinking is a maneuver. It was designed that if you jink at the right time, if you place a crewman at the back and he sees a missile coming at you, he calls breakdown, like a heat-seeking missile. You jink, or left the missile miss you. Mm-hmm. So I just had a gut feeling, let's jink. So I jink to the right, and a missile goes by us on the left side. Of course, it's, geez, they're shooting missiles at us. Jink the other way, sir. So stand by, ski. I jink to the left. Another one goes by us on the right. They're usually fired in pairs. We did not know that. Had I jinked a second or two later, we wouldn't be here today. Then we crossed the Karst line, and we did all rotation down to about 200 feet. We didn't want more missiles fired at us. Then we're at the water's edge line and reported feet wet. It's amazing. There were six aircraft that I reported right in the order. I imagine they went in order seniority. They had a big mother. Sierra Hotel, good job. And now we had to get gas, because our low fuel lights had been on for about 15 minutes. So now we had a good 5 minutes of gas left. We started to gradually climb up a little bit higher, and sure enough, they brought a ship into us. This is Cleveland. The LPD had a big deck on it. We landed there.
There's a lot going on there. I didn't live this, you did. But when you are staring at limited fuel and not knowing if you're going to make it to a ship in time to fuel up, is there some kind of thought or conversation about, we've been through all this and now we're going to run out of fuel?
Yeah, that certainly goes through your mind. And that's what I thought about. You measure fuel very closely.
This is a long day, a day that had everything, it seems like. I want to put it in perspective, though. Not that any mission is typical or average. They're all unique. But what would you say the length of a typical search and rescue mission would be, time-wise?
Well, certainly within 3 hours of fuel that we have on board.
So usually you've got one tank of fuel, 3 hours worth, and you're going, retrieving, returning, all within those 3 hours.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
But on August the 6th, 1972, how many hours were you flying that helicopter for?
5.7 hours. I say most of that time was all nighttime, too. Uh-huh. It was a black night. That's what saved Jim Lloyd being a black knight, but that's what made the mission hard to fly.
And there's so many questions I'd like to ask you about this. I can tell that you have a lot of respect for this pilot, Jim Lloyd, and you guys have become really good friends over the years. How often do you guys talk?
Well, he called me, first year he called me on 6 August. He said, hey, Harry, do you remember what you were doing a year ago? And so I said, yeah, picking your butt up off Vietnam. He calls me. Second year, you know, you did 2 years ago, and then last six August, he called me again. He said, do you remember what you're doing 50 years ago tonight? So he calls me every year on 6 August. Let's say 7 o'clock, this phone call.
Is there an element of what he did that day or what he went through that has impressed or made an impact on you?
Well, I think he went through a lot that night. He played it very cool.
And you weren't the only guy on that helicopter. What do you appreciate about your co-pilot and the rest of your crew that night?
Well, I have the highest esteem for all of them. I'm Bill Young. He's a fully qualified aircraft commander, as I was. And he actually was in the right seat. And he did most of the flying that night. And I was able to sit back and make decisions. And he comfortably flew the airplane.
You guys were a good team, obviously. Obviously, you've had a lot of time to think about this. You've written it up. You've seen what Jim's written. You two talk every year on the 6th of August. When you think back of it, it's been 50 years. Is there a moment or two within that whole ordeal that you still think about and marvel and say, how in the world did that happen that way?
Oh, yes. I still remember very vividly. We're going to look out the left side after turn on the spotlight. A guy standing there aiming at us with his gun. The muzzle flash is going off. And I have a picture, a lot of the light shining on my boot. The Lord said, he shall not suffer thy foot to be moved. Mm-hmm. Though he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep.
Something tells me you probably never looked at that passage, Psalm 121, the same either.
That's right, yeah.
It kind of makes it come alive a little bit.
Sure does, yes.
And what did it feel like when you finally went to bed that night? I mean, what? Because that's, you know, everybody can identify with that. The end of a long day, what do they think of? What do they reflect on? Do you remember what you reflected on that night?
Well, we landed, our skipper, he had landed on the ship first, so he was there waiting for us. And he hugged us. And skipper, put me down. So he hugged me, kept hugging me. I felt a little embarrassed, you know. Skipper, put me down. And then we all went in the wardroom. Jim Lloyd, he went in too. And he came out, and then he was in a set of PJs. We just celebrated that night for a couple hours in the wardroom of Cleveland.
And they inspected your helicopter the next day?
Yeah, we inspected the helicopter the next day. We had a total of 12 bullet holes in the helicopter. One shot at Razor Terror Drive Shaft. Had been a couple inches lower, we may not be here either.
So 12 bullet holes in your helicopter, and one of them was in the tail rotor's crankshaft. So if that was just a very small amount higher or lower, that would have knocked you guys out of the sky or made it so you couldn't control it?
Yes, it would have been a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. It just grazed the top of the tail rotor drive shaft.
Well, and I know that you've done a lot of teaching in your life. I mean, you spent 26 years in the Navy, and then when you retired, you started the junior ROTC program at Lemoore High School near NAS Lemoore. And so you taught a lot of future naval officers. I'm wondering what August 6th, 1972 taught you. Because that's an experience. That's one day in your life that you've probably spent more time talking about that day than any other day in your life. What was the lesson of that day? What did it teach you?
Well, the big thing it taught me was the Lord was with us that night. He certainly was. People ask you, were you scared? Well, you're not scared at the time. You're so busy.
Well, and you say that, you know, that's what it taught you. So I'm just wondering if there are other things in the 50 years since that maybe you faced with a different degree of confidence because you were able to get through that night.
I think so. It makes you put other things in perspective, I think. Mm-hmm. Like you don't worry about the small stuff anymore. Yeah. Or you don't worry about it as much, the small stuff. You don't worry about that as much anymore.
Yeah, and there's another part of your story, and if there's anything you don't want to talk about, you know, feel free to tell me that. But like a lot of people your age who served in Vietnam, you were exposed to Agent Orange. You didn't know what that was going to mean for your life. What are some of the things that you've seen that you believe are the effects of that exposure?
Well, I've developed Parkinson's as a result of that. It affected my speech very significantly. It affects my walk. So I have a hard time walking, I have a hard time talking. So those are two big things that affects me. I feel my mind is still fairly good, though.
Well, and we've heard that firsthand with your memory of something 50 years ago in very clear fashion. There's not too many people who can wear a medal called the Navy Cross. When did you find out that they were giving you the Navy Cross? The only thing higher than that's the Medal of Honor.
Yes. We have one Medal of Honor winner in 1987. It's Lieutenant Clyde Lassen. And we did everything that he did. And so we're going to write up our award for the Medal of Honor. But we were told that the ship would not release the Medal of Honor because they got word back from Washington, D.C. that the climate was not right. We were trying to draw down on the war. They did not want any publicity.
So I want to make sure I understand this right. So your commander, was that McCracken who wrote you up?
Yes.
What he wrote up, his petition for the medal, he said this deserves the Medal of Honor, right?
That's correct.
But the top brass in Washington said, we're trying to ease out of this war. We don't want something that gets people more excited about it, so don't give them the Medal of Honor.
That's right. They didn't want any congressional involvement at all.
So you get the Navy Cross, which is, again, something very few people get. Did that affect how you felt about it?
No, not at all. The Navy Cross is the highest military award. We felt good about that.
And was there a special ceremony to present it?
Yes, there was. Our Sink Pack Fleet himself came down. Admiral Clary came down, presented us the awards.
That's the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet. What did that feel like when that's getting pinned to your chest?
Well, it feels pretty good.
I guess I should ask you, too. I mean, there's so many other stories you could tell that we didn't touch on here. But when you think back of 26 years in the Navy, 76 years on the planet, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm really thankful for my two wives that I had. My first wife was with me for 44 years. She was a wonderful lady. She passed away in her sleep. She died of an enlarged heart, and I knew that she had a big heart. And then I met my other wife. We've been married 10 years now. She's a wonderful lady, too. So I tell everybody I dated two women in my life, and I married both of them.
You're batting 1,000.
Yeah.
So you started the Junior ROTC program in a Navy town, Lemoore, California, at Lemoore High School. You taught a lot of kids. What's the most important thing that you think young people today need to understand about the price of freedom and guys like you who are willing to pay it?
Well, you're exactly right. They need to understand the price of freedom. That freedom is not free.
Well, if there's anything else that is important for you to share, feel free, but I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for sharing this incredible story with us, and thank you for your example.
Thank you, Paul, for taking your time and coming on here and talking to me. It's really appreciated.
What a privilege to hear Harry Zinser's story. And wouldn't you like to hear this story from the perspective of that downed pilot, Jim Lloyd? We hope to have him on Hometown Heroes in the very near future. But for now, here's a short clip from a video you can find at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. The pilot who was rescued talking to the pilot who picked him up.
As I said before many times, Harry, and I'll say it many times in the future, you know, thank you for my life. It's been great. You know, when you get older, when you at the time, I think about, well, I almost lost my, you know, it almost ended at 27 years and 60 days. But as 50 years looking back, it's not just the future. It is actual events and people and family and whatever that I've had that I would have missed out on if it wasn't for you guys. So, again, thank you.
You bet, Jim.
So again, you can check out that video online, and you can look forward to hearing Jim Lloyd's story on a future episode. We're out of time today, but I do want to thank Harry's friend and fellow aviator, Patty Briney, for facilitating our privilege of sharing Harry's story with you today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you can join us again next time when we'll be reminded once again through the stories of our veterans of those four words you heard Harry say just a few minutes ago: freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.